garbage.
Yep.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to tonight's October 7th, 2019 regular fellow city council meeting. If you'd all please rise for a short private invocation, asking for God's blessing upon this city and upon the council as for wisdom as we make our decisions tonight. Now, if you'd please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. I'd like to welcome everybody here again tonight for coming. Our first item 1.4 on our opening items is a roll call, and tonight Mark Snyder texted me and said that he was feeling ill and so he wouldn't be able to attend. So I'd entertain a motion to excuse Mark from tonight's meeting.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And item 1.5 is citizen input. Is there any citizen here tonight who would like to address the Othello City Council for any reason? Please raise your hand. And I'll recognize you, and you can step to the microphone and have up to 5 minutes. Is there anyone here? Okay, hearing none. I'll move to item 2, which is the approval of our agenda tonight.
Make that motion.
Second.
We have a motion to approve our agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 3 is our consent agenda. I'd entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent agenda.
Make that motion.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And with that, we'll move to our current business tonight. And the first item, 4.1, an order of business is a proclamation for Kindness Week. And I want to welcome all of the Smile for Kyle group, and thank you for coming. Because this is making me smile too. So let me read this proclamation, and then I'm going to call Lisa to the microphone. So whereas Kindness Week is inspired in memory of Kyle Ludi, who is a beloved 10-year-old resident of the Othello community. Whereas Kyle was an athlete, a musician, a student, comedian, a church member, and a philanthropist. Whereas Kyle was well known for his kind and generous heart, his joyful enthusiasm, and making friends and strangers smile. Whereas kindness encourages compassion, empathy, a positive spirit, and enhances community relations. Whereas kindness reinforces positive social, emotional, relational, and mental health. Whereas the City of Othello places a high priority on loving its friends and families well, and creating a community environment that is safe, positive, and filled with caring neighbors. Now, therefore, I, Sean Logan, Mayor of Othello, do recognize October 13th through October 20th, 2019 as Kindness Week, and encourage all citizens to use their superpowers and be kind to one another. Signed, the 7th day of October, 2019, Mayor Sean Logan. And with that, I would like to call to the microphone. Well, first of all, I want to thank Lisa and Will for being here, and I want to thank everyone who came in support of them and of Kyle. And Lisa, I asked if you would come to the microphone, please. And the entourage.
On behalf of my family, my name is Lisa, I'm Kyle's mom, this is Kyle's dad, Will, and his sisters that can be here tonight, Macy, Valentina, and Eva, his sister Skylar is in Colorado and could not be here. But then two of his best friends are here with us as well, his dad and Luke, and we're so thankful that they are able to stay on with us tonight. It kind of means a lot to my mom's heart. And so thank you to the City Council, I'm Erin Logan. Thank you for remembering Kyle with us. leaders of this community, it really deserves to be commended for that incredibly gracious and compassionate and kind heart. And so this is not just about Kyle, although it is, it's also about the people of Othello, and we thank you just for the opportunity to share emphasizing that. Would you like me to share still the calendar of events? I see that you
have. You sure may.
Okay. So Mayor Logan asked me to share some of the activities about me. Did the council members have the flyer? Okay.
We do, right?
So.
Oh, okay. Do you have some more?
Yes, I have some.
Oh, Tanya, Chi.
Okay. So there's a lot of words on this page, and so I'm going to just be really quick. There are about 30 people who have planned Kindness Week. This has come together in just a few weeks' time, like 3 or 4 weeks. So we've been working really hard, and it's just a simple way to embrace kindness and share it with everyone. On the print in blue is just specific action, ways to take action with kindness for the day. Some of them are do something kind for someone anonymously, invite someone over for dinner. Just specific acts of kindness too that we can just challenge ourselves and think maybe in ways that we wouldn't normally think about being kind. And then all of this in the red are things that people have planned. So I'm just going to do just go through it really quickly. On Sunday, October 13th, there will be a Kindness Rock Scavenger Hunt. This is the day that Kyle passed away, and one of the activities we enjoyed with him was a scavenger hunt. So it is in his spirit that we are painting a bunch of rocks, and we will be hiding them in public places, in Othello, the parks. You might find them on a park bench or tucked behind a trash can. They will have different themes and colors, and there are prizes that have been donated for these rocks. First prize is an Amazon Echo and some gift certificates and a kindness t-shirt. And then second prize is Amazon Dots and a t-shirt. And then third prize is a t-shirt. So that is on Sunday. On Monday, all the t-shirts for the Smile the Craft Fund will be delivered, and the information is on there. There is also McFarland Middle School is starting a food drive for the week, and community members can take food there. OHS students are doing a coat and blanket drive, and the Adams County Animal Shelter also have some supplies that we're doing the drive for all week. On Tuesday, there will be a remembrance vigil for Kyle at our residence for anybody who would want to remember him or share stories. On Wednesday, we have a lot of musician friends. And so there will be surprise little musical treats around town that day. Oh. I'm not sure where, and I'm not sure when, and hopefully we can catch them. Thursday, Chalk the Walk. Students wanted to express kindness and joy, sign into town, and we gathered a group that students could come and decorate the sidewalk. And then on Friday, people that bought their superhero kindness shirts, we're asking people to wear that in memory of Kyle to show your spirit. If you don't have a kindness shirt, you can wear blue or a superhero shirt. There are a group of people going to play games with the residents of Avalon. There will be a fundraiser at Walmart and an adopt a pet event. And at the Othello High School football game, I hear there's something fun that night from courtesy of our drum majors in Bandit. On Saturday, Mobile Petting Zoo has been offered at the farm by Walmart. It's a free event. There will be a fundraiser jar for the Smile for Kyle Fund. The pumpkin patch will be open and families can enjoy that together. And at 7 to 9 that same day is a family-friendly, kid-friendly country line dance. And I don't know how to country line dance, but here there's people there that can teach us. So, it'll be fun. And then on Sunday, just a night of hope. We just wanted to wrap up the week with just celebrating that the worst days of our life is hard to have and surviving them. But we have, and it's because of the people around us. And that's all I have to say.
Lisa, Will, Macy, Serenity, Eva. On behalf of the City Council of Othello, we just want to thank you for, we've never had an event, a week-long event especially, quite like this. And we're honored to be able to help and assist with this in any way, but we're just also, just appreciate the volunteer and community effort that have rallied around you to support you and probably, like you mentioned a couple of times, the most difficult time in your life. And on the anniversary of that, something beautiful is going to come out of this, and something special, something joyful. And not surprised you have musical friends, and that should be a great flash mobs and everything else. That'll be really fun. So it sounds like you guys have a great lineup here, and we're just really thankful and grateful for you as a family, and you certainly have all of our support. Thank you.
Thank you.
So now as we move on in our agenda, item 1.2 is an update to our building code. And tonight we have our community development director, Ann Henning, with us. And she's going to lead us through this discussion.
Not a question so much as what's the inconvenience for that? To declare that they, you know, come in and declare that they want a building permit for putting, you know, a shed or something on the property, the cost couldn't be that significant, is it?
So right now, if it's up to $2,000 evaluation, the permit fee is $75.
$5?
$75.
And everywhere else is kind of just done away with this, requiring a building permit?
The state exempts it. They're under state exemption, but we're going to go in and we're going to say, no, you have to have a building permit.
We are right now.
We are, yeah.
That's the way the code is written right now.
Yeah.
And so you're suggesting, I'm sorry.
I'm just trying to think of the different, they still have to follow setback rules, and they still have to follow, you know, I mean, you can't sit your shed right on the
fence
line.
Well, if it's a shed, if it's a movable shed, you can put it right on the on your property line.
Right,
you don't have to be. You don't have to have a setback.
Well, if they were getting a building permit, would that be allowed?
If it's needed a building permit, then that's not allowed to be for an easement or.
But she, so is this for a portable as well? Something that's under 200 square feet? Do they need a permit for that?
Yes, correct.
But even if you didn't require a permit, it still wouldn't be allowed to cover those easements and setbacks.
Right, although without a permit, there's no review, and so
But we have that all over the ordinances. It's a call in and complain. It's for some reason we've adopted that where we drop it on Heather. It's Heather's problem. So why are we taking a? Why do we need to do it for this? Because I have some issues with a few things in here, and that's one of them. I don't believe we should need a building permit to put up a 120 square foot shed. You know, I think that's kind of silly, and especially at $75.
And so this is making it so that that's not required.
I thought, well, according to this, it says the OMC proposed deleting. The way I read it, it's where we're going to require a building permit for everything.
So that's it.
But it says right here there are building projects that can be that under $500, but for which a building permit should still be required. And it even says such as changing a window or a door.
Right. So there's currently an exemption for under $500 adopted in the municipal code of if your project's under $500 and it doesn't require a permit. And so the proposal is to change that so that it's not based on the
Yeah, you could have a shed that's over $500. If it's a portable shed, and if it's 1500, being portable, we don't need it. That's exempt, right?
Not currently. No.
I know it's not currently, but it is going to be. Yeah.
So it would be if it's under the size threshold.
Yeah.
Okay. That line. Yeah, you're right. That line's kind of confusing. I read that to see that we were going to bypass the state exemption on that and require a building permit for that.
Yeah, I read it a couple of times to get
there
it right.
There wouldn't be a building exemption if it's under $500. That's what the one in number 7 is talking about.
So if somebody wants to build a shed in their backyard, if this passes through, if somebody wants to build a shed in their backyard, they don't have to go get a building permit.
If it's under 200 square feet.
Okay. The code, the actual ordinance itself says 120 square feet, though.
So it's 120 for commercial and 200 for
residential.
This says 120 square feet in residential zones and over 200 square feet in commercial or industrial.
So you've got it backwards on the agenda.
And it says it the way you're talking about in the memo.
Number 6, yeah.
But in the ordinance itself, It says the 120 for
residential.
For residential and 200 for commercial.
Mm-hmm. Where are the ordinance are you looking
at? Under accessory buildings. It would be 14.430. I think it's C. Right, under 118.2.
Is council in favor of these changes that she's saying on just this? But I'm just talking about this particular 1404030.
How enforced is that now?
What do you mean?
For a 200 square foot shed, is everyone coming in here for a building permit?
Yeah, we're requiring a building permit for everything because that's the way the code is written right now.
Sure, but is it happening?
If you see it, we require it.
So you're shaking your head, Heather.
If I get a report on one and I know it, yes, I
can. Okay. So then you have to contact the homeowner, mm-hmm, and inform him of the fact that he has to get a building permit for that. And then you also have to inform him of the fact that You can't put it right up against the fence line. You can't overextend the easement.
And usually it's the neighbors that complain when their neighbor brings one in, so.
Right, so it's still going to you no matter what. So because of somebody turning that person in. And that's kind of where I was getting to. I didn't want to, again, throw another item towards you to have to police for the city, but now I have a better understanding of what you're trying to do.
Well, I'm seeking direction, council. Are you guys in favor of that?
I'm absolutely in favor of deleting that.
And going with these exceptions.
120 and 200.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do have one more question. I'm not sure if it would be part of that section or not. It says in here that you have to get a building permit to replace a window or a door in your home. Did I read that right?
Yes. If you're just doing like for like, then it's going to tell you don't need a permit.
Okay.
But if you're changing the size, then you need a permit. And we'd rather have people talk to the inspector, get clear what they're doing, rather than say it's exempt and then they say, well, you said it's exempt. So.
Well, that's kind of touchy because if you're going to allow them to change windows, you can go from a slider to a picture window. And if it's a bedroom and you need an egress window,
no, I
you know, you can't. So it has to be, it has to be inspected.
But that doesn't make that clear in here. It says if you want to replace, in fact, the word says if you want to replace a window. So, you know, I'm not going to go get a building permit if I want to replace a window for a window. You know, that was my question.
Well, see, they're not going to know if you're going to replace a slider with the slider or a slider with the picture window. That's the thing.
Right.
That's why the inspector has to
but
see that.
I just wanted to make sure of that. You know, I mean, on Friday night, somebody breaks my window. I go to Home Depot and buy a window and put it in there to replace it.
Well, you're talking to glass.
Buy a building permit.
Yeah, you're talking to glass. That's different.
Well, it's replacing the window. The window's replacing.
Yeah, if you take the window off,
no.
That's totally different from replacing the glass.
But I get totally what you're saying.
The ordinance today requires somebody to come in and get a $75 building permit if they buy the $2,000 shed.
And so that would be another tool for enforcement.
No, it's wrote wrong.
I don't know if we have questions about.
Right now, we do not ask for a building permit for anything below 120 square feet.
So there were some highlighted areas.
200 square feet, and it's over $2,000. You have to get one.
That was on that. The only thing that I didn't like about that was they're given automatic access. The city's saying, yeah, you have access to go if you have reasonable cause. And we talked about that on Orange. It was passed a couple of years ago, and it is what it is. So what happens, just out of curiosity on that, what happens if Heather goes or the building inspector goes up and knocks on the door and says, you're not getting in? So what happens then?
We get a civil warrant. We have to prove that there is cause for us to go in. So we see 8 cars parked on the yard in the street every night at 7 o'clock, you know, when everybody comes home from work, and the garbage can in the back, they have either one overflowing or they have 2 and both are overflowing. So we look at the whole thing that tells us that, you know, there's a lot of people living there, and assuming that there aren't 14 beds in a 300-foot structure that all these cars and people and garbage are creating. So we have to have just cause. I can't just push my way in.
Right, and that's why I was asking, what would happen if somebody refused access?
Right.
And you take all your evidence to the judge?
Yeah.
Just like getting a regular warrant?
Councilman, majority of the time we have another reason to be there. So that's when if an officer is there, sees something, and we're already inside, that's where we may call for code enforcement to come. That way we avoid having to go to a separate warrant. If we were to leave the property and then want to come back, then we would need a civil administrative warrant. But it's not very common.
So you worked with Tim on this as well?
Yes. The fire chief and Heather and the person at our city attorney's office who deals with the enforcement.
Okay. Well, then I think that should put together in the form of a motion for our future council meeting. If everybody's in agreement.
For an ordinance.
Mm-hmm. If everybody's in agreement, then there should be a motion to either amend or change the ordinance or create a new ordinance.
Right, so if we get to connect for discussion, see if we have any changes, and then
they'll bring it back.
Okay.
And then we'll vote on that.
Yep.
And that'll solidify our changes.
Thank you, Ann. That was a lot of work.
But you're not done. Let's move to item 4.3 is the discussion on the zoning update. And we postponed that because we only had 5 council members present and now we have 6. Mark would have been here, but he, of course, had taken ill. So I think we still need to go forward with the discussion. Will, did you have
something? Sorry to interrupt. Did someone drive a Honda Pilot and you're running outside the building in the vehicle?
Thank you.
Let the record show.
Really what?
I thought it was going to be really short.
Councilman Bain has his Honda.
Oh, it's time outside. To get to the meeting. You've got to shut it off.
Been having trouble with the remote start.
Uh-huh.
It starts when it wants to.
Uh-huh.
Like it seems to be working.
Yeah. You're right.
You just pushed the wrong button on your phone, didn't you? He butt-dialed his car. I better be careful. I'm on the record.
That's funny.
Yeah, this is the first I've heard about it.
Really?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard about it either.
What does it say?
Yeah,
the full
thing,
yes.
He used to.
That's a long ribbon cutting, man.
All right.
2.5 hours.
Councilman Bain, thank you. And let's continue our discussion.
Okay, so we are talking about the zoning again.
Well, I'll be
and
there.
We had about 6 issues we needed to discuss further before we could move on. So I don't know what order we want to take those in.
Go with number one.
Okay.
So you gave us some interesting information from Sandpoint and Pocatello, Idaho, and about the off-street parking.
Right. Which, so I think you need to think about what you want your community to look like and the parks of your community to be like. Really, these aren't really picked out things that really brought home to me of if you require parking for every use, you cannot have a downtown lots of buildings close together just in a space for it. So you decide, is that what you want? Do you want it all to be parking lots? And, I mean, kind of similar to how things are now. And think about what you want, what you like in other places, just what direction do we want to go?
Well, we'd like parking lots, I'd say. I mean, there's First. You can't do nothing with First. That's a done deal where buildings have been there forever. I know I read up on Sandpoint where they were knocking buildings to you know, create plant, and it's worked for them real good. I mean, the economy's been growing there. But First is a tough one. But if we go forward in our development, I think we should, require parking.
I mean, you don't have to require it everywhere. You can have,
Some street.
You know, we don't really have much of the traditional downtown. There are some buildings up the sidewalk, but then there's gaps, and so it's a little, you know.
Yeah, we don't have a concentrated section of businesses that require a tremendous amount of parking.
The only thing that I see is that you need a parking for every 200 square feet, right? Am I right there? A stall? If I remember correctly. So sometimes, you know, like, sometimes you have you put up a building, and for example, if you have an H&R Block where they're not going to be running all year, example, the building I'm putting up right now. We're not going to have the 24 stalls, but we go back and we kind of go over, you know, what businesses are there. So you have a business, you know, they only got two people going in there. You got the smoke shop. They got cars going in and out. We got 3-4 cars. Wino's got 2-3 cars. You know, so all told, you probably have 15-20 cars throughout the whole that are really working there. So I think there should be some kind of a variance when we shouldn't stick to every 200 feet, one stall. That's what the ordinance reads, I think.
For retail.
For retail, yeah.
There are different standards for different uses of office, than retail. Restaurants are more.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean. Depending on the use, and we can kind of conform to or agree with a business owner to have less stalls for the certain business that they're putting in. We can do that, right? I mean, we.
By the code right now, I mean, there's standards of the code. If you're getting a variance, you're going to be hearing examining yourself. There's something special about your lot that's different than others. So it's not very flexible, other than when you have a large site like yours that has multiple tenants.
Yeah.
So I have a question. So if we don't pass that zone through and allow an area of no parking, can we grandfather businesses in, like what's up here on 4th and Main Street, to where they, if they do the remodel, they wouldn't be forced to put in parking lots? Because I think it's a bad idea to not make people have, I think it's a bad idea to not have parking spots. Then you run into problems with businesses that don't have any parking spots, then people going to those businesses are using parking to businesses that do have parking lots. So, you know, one business is paying for parking for another business that doesn't have any parking lots or parking stations. Was that totally confusing, or do you understand what I did?
So I did. They have a city parking lot in the middle of their 5-block downtown that people can park in, and said, you know, sometimes people have to walk 2 blocks, but you convert that to, you park in the Walmart parking lot, you walk into the back of the store, and you walk 2 blocks, then 2. So he also suggested that the on-street parking can be utilized more. Angle parking is gained about 30% more parking.
What is recommended in the traditional commercial zone, traditional downtown commercial zone, that the Planning Commission has in the plan?
That there be no parking required in that area, which is again a small area.
So possibly going to angle parking and things like that.
We didn't talk about that.
No, we didn't talk about that.
Where would we do angled parking at down there? That would be off Main Street.
Mm-hmm. You'd leave one lane only. It'd be tough.
Main Street used to have parking all the way.
Yeah, you've got
right. Wide enough.
In the old days.
But that would be a different time.
That was a different day.
I don't know what you did. First of all, you got to decide what is your retail section of town. Where is this parking going to be required? Really,
I think it was
because
that was proposed in the, what was proposed in the C1 area, which is right around First and Main.
Yeah. It was just that traditional downtown. It was just one little zone.
There's a city parking lot behind the library right now, which we have opened for anyone to park in.
It's also very small.
There is a vacant parking lot that sits right across the street from CDHA. There's a vacant parking lot.
That's private property. Then you're getting back into private property.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no signs that said parking is prohibited.
Actually, there is. There's a sign that says CDHA parking only on it.
Yeah.
Well, CDHA doesn't own the building anymore.
You know, but it's still a fact you're getting into private property. That's somebody's private property that you're going to give, that you want to give permission for one business to use it doesn't own that property. The other thing is that's the area that will be approved for apartments, correct? Is an apartment approved for C1?
So in both of the, or all three of the commercial zones, apartments would be allowed above
the commercial.
Right, so
above the retail and commercial businesses.
So we're not going to make any parking required for apartment buildings? I understand it's not going to be a 50-unit building, you know, but it's still, I don't know.
So in the proposal, parking would be required in C1 for residential, but not for other uses.
Okay.
You know, reading both of those, I think what Ann's really asking us, I mean, you have this issue that Corey brought up about the existing, but then there's also, what about new development? And I think that's really more the question she's asking about, new development, new areas that are undeveloped. Let's just say that, for example, the property south of Columbia Basin Health and along that Columbia.
That would be zone C1,
no?
This is just
that
main
small
first area.
Yeah, she's just talking
just,
about.
You don't want to create
new areas. That's the whole point.
This is talking about a traditional downtown zone, commercial zone, and it's just that one little, one or two block area.
You don't want more of them. That's my point.
So this was a traditional downtown buildings up to the street, no parking.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
right? But those are existing areas of town, and I'm talking about new areas.
Well, I don't think why we'd build that. I don't know why we'd build like that going forward. Why would we congest? Not on the new.
In that area that's near First.
First over here, but not on new construction.
The traditional downtown area in just that zone.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, but the point in the Sandpoint article was that it allowed certain businesses to do things and locate that with all the amount of additional land they'd have to acquire for parking, made the whole issue a non-starter.
In their downtown.
But in their downtown.
Was the point.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, traditionally how a downtown, buildings are close together, people park once, they walk more to the outskirts. They would usually drive from, you know, they go to this business,
okay, but I would argue in Othello, we have yet to really develop a downtown.
Yes, true.
And that's what I'm arguing now, is that why wouldn't we let somebody create an old-fashioned downtown if they wanted to?
Well, it would be allowed in the commercial zone that they're proposing in the downtown in that area. And we could always expand that later, but at least we establish.
Would require a rezone.
We'd establish a traditional downtown zone for those buildings that are already existing that are built that way.
Yeah, Gene, I think it's hard to say, you know, we're talking about a rezone of the entire town, and it's hard to say that we're going to allow this here and not here. Let's get somebody who wants to do it first, and then we'll talk. Right? In other words, we need a developer who wants to build an old-fashioned downtown, and then we'll have a discussion with him about a rezone in an area that
he could do that. That would make sense.
But we do have some buildings that are basically built like a traditional downtown.
We have existing.
In that small area, and that's what they're talking, we're talking about just that zone.
But you wouldn't be able to go to them now and say all of a sudden they're requiring parking. So what?
No, it would be redevelopment or redevelopment. Somebody's taking an empty building, changing occupancy, or building them one of the big lots. That's there.
Okay. Well, if we're just talking about the existing, I don't see where we're going to make them. I think this traditional downtown zone would be appropriate.
I think it would be appropriate, yes.
Because you're saying, so the building that just moved down, three buildings, that's now on the corner of Main and First, would have, without this, would have been required to provide parking? Or no?
So currently, they are required to provide parking.
But they're using the library parking lot as part of their parking. So this will address that issue of whenever they move or when something new goes into a building that doesn't have any parking, them having to provide so much parking.
But what this does, this makes it so they don't have to.
They don't have to, you're right.
But that's what I think we've had the issue before where it's come and they were being required to provide so much parking,
right.
But they didn't have it.
But is it logistically possible?
Well, like she said, you could go to angled parking in some of those areas and provide a little bit more parking for the traditional downtown area. And she said we gained 30% parking.
Are we wide enough for angle parking? That would only be on the west side then? On First, right? Because you couldn't do it on both sides because you wouldn't be able to get traffic through. Huh? Yeah, just one lane. Then we had to create two, you know, one ways. Oh, Main Street is, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not First. First, you could probably do it on one side of the street and still be a little tight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's number one. Shall we head to number two?
So are we going to require parking or not?
Well, I
think
are
there should
be a looking for. We're not looking for making a motion today. This is information.
I'm looking for direction of how to write.
I don't think we should require there. Not there.
Well, I think that there should be a traditional downtown commercial zone that with no off-street parking requirement.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's a lot of vacant space down there, behind the buildings and
there
around
is.
The buildings. There's a open parking lot today, and if somebody wanted to come in and build a business, whether they were going to do it where the old car wash station was or whatever, you know, there's deals to be made. You want parking for your business, then buy the parking lot across the street from CVHA. If you can't afford that, if it's too expensive, then the lot above it that's vacant, maybe you buy that. But you know, those are things that you have to consider when you want to make a business.
Does the traditional commercial zone that you're talking about also cover the building with commercial tire? Does it go up that far? Because I know that that's one of those buildings that we've always had the issue of no parking for those buildings, and there's not enough room behind them.
So the proposal goes from 4th Avenue West to...
Yeah, it does. So yes, it does. Because I know that like that building there, where you've got commercial tire and you've got, I think, the chiropractic and the Realty, it goes far back far enough, there's not parking really behind it, and there's just the little bit of parking that's in the fog line. And I know they're always complaining that there's not enough parking, and when it comes down to snow removal, I think is when we usually start getting the complaints.
Oh, yeah. See, this is what I've been saying.
Yeah.
This is what I've been trying to say all night. Is we see the issues of with that building right there that doesn't have parking.
Yeah.
Like if
but
we
those buildings are already existing, and I think that
right.
most of that area, those buildings are already exist. This is where we have those buildings where it's already existing, and we're creating a zone to allow those.
That would allow more of the problems that they're having.
But there's not a lot of open space for new building down there, unless somebody
right.
comes along and tears an entire mm-hmm. area out.
That's where I think your idea of having it grandfathered for those existing, but I think going forward, like down on, I think it was on First, there is a lot of space, like you said, before the movie theater.
All around it.
Yeah.
But is that included in the non-traditional? Or I mean traditional downtown here?
Businesses.
Across the street from the library and up to the side of it.
So it'll go up as far as Pine, I think.
Yeah.
Just a Pine.
If you look at the
So it's just got the one
corner
empty empty corner lot back there, that's it.
If you look at the old pictures of Othello, the only buildings that existed at that time, you know, you saw this huge street. There was the Brunswick, there's Benavides, the building next to that. There was two across the street that are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went up the Bellinger Hotel, which burnt down. And then there was a water tower. I mean, that was the original
Othello.
Downtown Othello.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had the railroad property, which is, you know, over there behind well number 6 and stuff like that that's gone now, and I don't see that ever becoming something again. We don't have like Pocatello and Sandpoint. We don't have an old downtown with Prius, you know, with we're not like Ritzville, you know. Ritzville's a good example. They've got a beautiful downtown area, beautiful with a Carnegie Library and all kinds of historic, you know, structures. The oldest historic structure in Othello is the Brunswick. The second would be, you know, like that's left standing would be the buildings across the street
Anvil.
I mean that would
Anvil on Oscar's property.
But I mean the Bureau building, you know, I mean that's a landmark building. In Othello, built during the 50s when they started the project. But other than that, there's not a centralized downtown where we have, you know, like you go to Sandpoint, you've got retail all over the place, and you're gonna park where you can find parking and then walk the town, just like you do up at Coeur d'Alene, you know? But we don't have that available to the people here.
So we don't really have a problem down First, right, to where people are complaining. I mean, every time I park around that area, I've always managed to park and not have a problem, you know.
Well, if I went to Commercial Tire, I'd pull up into Commercial Tire, you know, and then run in and say, hey, I want this done to my car, and then I'd leave it there with the keys and walk home.
They'll move it around.
And then I'd come back and get it. And it'd usually be parked along the side street. If I went to the chiropractor, I would just pull up in front because somebody would probably be leaving as I was coming in.
Exactly.
If I wanted to go to the real estate or get my taxes done, which I do, just pull up and find a parking spot.
Across the street.
Yeah. Most of those businesses are one or two people at a time, you know.
Well, I'm fine with establishing that traditional downtown in those existing areas. as long as the council is.
I am.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we move on?
Okay, landscaping. So we're good to arrive looking for houses that have been built fairly recently that didn't have landscaping. And I found three that were past the 1 year. And one of them, they poured the curbing, so I think they're probably doing something. I would keep an eye on that. There are two others from 2016 that I will have to follow up with. But that's all I found. So I don't know if there are older ones. You know, in the discussion, it sounds like this is a big problem, but I didn't find it to be a problem. Although I know the previous planning secretary had gone around, she did go around, she wrote letters, and those people mostly complied. So.
Well, I still think that grass in the front yard to keep the, because I know when they first started building over there, when the wind came up, it was a dust bowl. And if there was a little bit of grass in the front yard, it would have helped keep it down a lot more, and you wouldn't have had to do nearly as much watering.
Well, if the back's not required, you're going to get that half that dust bowl. So, I mean, if to me, as a builder, and, you know, Mark's not here to say what he shares with us all the time, but if they're complying within a year, I really don't see that's a big problem. You know, we go back to what Mark says every time. A lot of times, adding $2,000-$3,000 to the loan, they won't comply. I mean, it just throws them out of their debt to ratio. So, believe it or not, it does happen. So us as a city, we should, I mean, if we want to grow, those little things like that, we should look at to where if there's 15 houses less, that's less revenue for the city. Really it is, because the yard's going to get done within a year. I mean, you're talking three houses here. Look at how many Olson's built, look at how many I built. Come on. It's not a big issue.
See, to me, it seems like it would be harder to come up with the cash to do that than it would be to roll it into the loan. And like Maria said, the amount that costs would be minimal. It would be like $10, you said?
Well, that $10 sometimes throws you, you're a banker, Maria, and you know what debt to ratio is. And if you miss it by $1, you're not going to get the loan. You know that as well as I do. Yeah, that's just banks, that's just the way they run. So going back to what you said, Gina, so it's different because you can go in there, put the curbs one day, you can go and spread seed and have grass within, you know, 3, 4, 5 months. So that's more affordable to somebody, and not everybody's gonna plant sod. Other people are gonna do different things where you can probably put it in for $1,000. They do it themselves. Versus I do it, I'm going to charge $3,000-$4,000 because I got to make a profit of it. Off of it, of course, that's what business is. So, I'm still with, if we're three homes, out of, I don't know how many we built between Olson and I. You go to Palos Verdes, they're all done there. Over here, you probably have one or two, and I think we're compliant here. We may have one, and we have been talking to them. But as far as it being a problem, I don't see a problem.
I just feel you have to be consistent. You can't want a build to look extremely well in one area and then
drop the ball.
Not require it here.
Yeah, we're always talking about how we want a fellow to look nice.
How does Palo Verde look? How does Olympia look?
It does look good.
That's all I have to say right there.
Yeah, that's a little different story.
Yeah.
Go back, go drive around over there, see what it looks like.
But they're not. You got more than just what you've done in town.
Because everybody's brought up the issue as well. If you get people that move into a home that don't really care about the yard, whether it's there or not, it's going to look the same in a year's time anyway. They're going to let it go. And I think it's up to the community that you live in, the neighborhood that you live in, to, govern that and regulate it.
But when I think
allowing them, a year's time to put in a yard is, the way it's been, is fine with me.
I got two fines. Do I have any more?
I'm fine.
Three fines, and how many not fine?
I'd like to see it done before they get their occupancy permit.
Two not fine, Maria?
I'd like to see it done.
Okay, so that's three and three, and Mark said that he was, when he was here, what did he say? Do you remember?
Year.
He wanted the year.
All right.
Okay, so I'll put it in the ordinance that way, and then you can discuss it.
You can, when you adopt the ordinance, you can make that change that night. So we'll have him, we'll have her put it in that it can be a year, because that's what it appears, that's how that segment's going to go. I just don't want to be here all night discussing all these, so I'm trying to move this along. So number three, where residential zonings should be allowed closer to existing industrial. Go ahead, Ann.
So this came out of the Planning Commission's recommendation, well, came out of a request from Terrible to increase the residential area of their property that is between Second and Broadway. Right now it's about two-thirds commercial, one-third residential alongside it. And they asked it to be flipped to be about two-thirds residential and one-third commercial, which would bring the residential area closer to the industrial area, as well as the Aspen R4 zone, so they could do a memory care facility. And there was a question about what did the fire chief say about that. And so he said that he would not support a change from R3 to R4, memory care facility, but if occupants could not care for themselves, and that could be an emergency. Most of these facilities have delayed egress devices to be able to prevent occupants from leaving the home without staff knowledge. There are other properties that would be better suited to have new care facilities for living in those capacities. So his recommendation is not to allow that. So I don't know that Ash would want to discuss that some more. This was an updated map that I gave you last time showing that additional change.
Yeah, that'll require some discussion.
What is memory care facility? I mean, is that a...
Alzheimer's.
Okay. So that's 24-hour care by a group of people?
So, so like the existing Coventry? Mm-hmm.
Like a nursing home.
Okay. But if they, I mean... It is as it is today. So like if they built something there, they would have to have the understanding that they are within so many feet of a industrial site where something could happen at either one of those facilities that could require an evacuation of their premises. And is that what the fire chief is worried about? Is that it would be difficult to evacuate that facility if it was needed?
Probably your staff to residence ratio is that's, small enough that it's going to take a while to get everybody out of there.
That's next to the ammonia plant.
Yeah, if it was an ammonia cloud or something like that, you're not going to be able to get everybody out of there fast enough to.
So basically, what this is, it's an additional 300 feet. It's 300 feet, right?
300 feet, but also a change from R3 to R4. So that changes what would be allowed there.
As far as occupancy.
Right.
You couldn't have multiple.
It's currently in R3. I
But the other thing, too, is that that's kind of a site. It's kind of an area where, you know, we have care facilities for the elderly. It's been started there. It's kind of isolated. It's on its own. And this is kind of a continuation of that, correct?
It's moving closer to the plant.
Right, but the street access that's available right now to Coventry is only one access, a single access.
Gina, so really, you're going west. Mm-hmm. So if you go distance from the plant, it's the same thing. You're going west of it. So if you're going to measure from here to the plants, it's about the same distance. I mean, I'm for it. My opinion is I'm for it because there's one there already.
I don't want to stop.
The only reason it has only one access to it is because they chose to, when they built that, they chose to build smaller roads, I believe. And so the city said that they wouldn't care for them, so that it's a privately owned road system that's in there.
They're...
And that's why it's a one ingress egress.
And it's completely fenced.
So, but the thing about this is we had a recommendation against it from the police chief, right, chief? Didn't you recommend against this? For the... So we've had a recommendation against it for, or our police chief has concerns.
And the fire chief.
Oh.
What are their concerns?
Well, she read Gary's concerns.
Yeah.
Is it any different than Coventry? I mean, what's...
So it's allowing another facility, it's allowing it closer. And I don't know, Coventry, I don't think is memory care, is it just a nursing home?
But we haven't seen what the proposal would be, what the plans would be. You know, I mean, there might be a buffer zone with a tree line, with a fence, to where if the worry is that somebody with Alzheimer's could wander off into the industrial
facility. But that was facility. My concern.
No,
that kind of facility,
it's the emergency.
Down so the people can't get out.
Right.
So then you need staff to be escorting everyone out.
And it's an additional
300 feet. It's the amount of time it would take to evacuate it in the case of an emergency, an ammonia exposure or whatever it be.
Well, our at McCain, our RMP, which is our risk management plan, has the directional flow heading more towards the northeast.
Mm-hmm.
Away from... So anybody, if there was a situation at Multifrost, the pet facility, the veterinary clinic would be at risk. Coventry already is at risk from Multifrost because the prevailing winds usually run to the northeast from the southwest. And all RMPs are pretty much the same. They draw a circle and say that if you're in that zone, then, but our zone covers the majority of the town already.
Well, I can say I'm not in favor of allowing them any closer to the industrial. I think we should go with the fire chief and the police chief's recommendation on this one.
Well, I don't have enough information from the developer to make a determination of what they want to do.
And you can't really do it based on what they say they're going to do, because you're just looking at what the zoning would be, what we allow, and not any, description that they're going to make of what they're going to do. So.
Because this is for the zone, it's not on a case-by-case basis.
So let me ask a question. The memory care, if we adopt this zoning, the memory care then would not be allowed in that property immediately
west
of Coventry? Or would it be allowed with, because you were saying it was a two-third, one-third commercial. So what would the impact of that be?
So it's conditional use in R3, In R, just in R4.
R4. Otherwise proposed in current zoning.
So are they asking to be zoned R4?
Yes, that was part of the request.
I'm not going to make a decision on this until they come forth and give us their reasons for wanting to do that. And that we can talk to them face to face. Were they at the Planning Commission? Did they ever show up at the Planning Commission when the public notice was given?
No.
Reason for what? For wanting to build that?
AJ's wanting to build that.
Well, the reason is you can't find property in town.
Okay, but come before us and give us your reason and let us express our concerns from both our police chief and our fire chief. And then, you know, if there's a way to around that, then we can talk about that particular area and what the zoning requirements.
But even if it goes to an R4, don't they have to do that anyway? Before they build, if it goes to an R4, won't they have to come before
it's the conditional.
Council? Because it's conditional?
Yeah.
Well, that's hearings examiner.
It wouldn't come before us, it'd go to a hearing examiner. So I want the opportunity to talk to the individual that wants to develop this and see what the plans are before I change the zoning on it. Right now, is it R3?
So the individual, are you saying AJ, or are you saying the developer, the builder that's gonna, who you want?
Well, there's somebody asking for the change.
AJ.
Okay. And if he has a representative, I'd like to listen to his representative. And I do understand that that's a community of, you know, adult care, that area. And they've chose that area. I think Janet Tagares chose that area for adult care. And it's an isolated community within the town of Othello. And if they want to enlarge that, I want them to be aware of the risks. I mean, because the noise level and the illumination out there is tremendous. You hear backup horns. You hear the thunder of the steam and the whirling sound of the processing plant all the time. I mean, that doesn't go away. Now, maybe older people, it wouldn't affect them. That's probably not politically the way to say it, but you know, I mean, that's what it is. Or they may build a buffer zone with a tree line that would muffle the sound and change, you know, where there's a lot of dust created out there. I mean, it's not supposed to, but it does.
All my dad would have to do is take his hearing aids off. You'd be good.
Okay, that's how I feel. Anybody else?
I agree with Gina saying, and leave it.
Well, and then we're not talking about that case in particular. This is coming from the Planning Commission on whether they even be allowed closer to the industrial. And mm-hmm. I don't think with the fire chief's recommendation and the police chief's recommendation that they should be allowed closer.
Well, I'd like to hear, like John said, I kind of would like to hear what they have to say, you know, against that.
But we still need to make a decision on the zoning.
Look, as far as...
We don't have to make it tonight.
Yeah.
Just direction.
As far as ownership of property within 300 feet of the industrial park, it's owned by one individual. Seriously, that's it, you know? And so if that individual wants to develop, you know, we can't just broad stroke and say, no, you cannot within 300 feet throw away your property because you can't do anything with it.
That's what a zoning plan is. A zoning plan makes it, you can do this here and this here, but not this here and that there. That's what a zoning plan does. You see what I'm saying?
Not really.
Sort of, but what he's saying here, John is saying, is that we're talking about this one particular area and what its zone is in that area.
Right, but...
But this isn't talking about that site-specific plan. It's talking about just for this zoning, for zoning.
Right, it's the zoning change in here. This, to allow this...
This isn't talking about that plan, that particular site. It's talking about just whether residential zoning should be allowed closer to existing industrial development.
But they don't say how close.
But this involves doing...
It's specific to that change that was requested.
But this would involve doing a zoning change there, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because there's a strip right there, just east of, what is it, west of Third, that's already residential.
Yeah.
So there, yeah.
I lived on the end of Fourth.
All right, so we're saying that we're going to change the entire zoning recommendations so that anything could be built closer?
No, it was specific to this request of expanding the residential between Second and Broadway and...
Site-specific.
It is
site-specific, because the way it reads in here, it's not.
Right, so I mean, yeah, these are the discussion points for that. That was, is tied back to that specific request.
And I'm not prepared to make a decision on that until I hear from the person who wants to do something with it. Because yeah. it is a closed community.
Yeah, I get that, John, but I also, I'm kind of, you know, if the two people that are in charge of the emergency services are against it, then I'm not really for it.
Well, what I heard is John will say he's being opposed to it last few years otherwise
yeah.
from the compliance. I think you do agree.
No. Gina's against it.
I'm undecided.
Yeah, and I get
undecided.
That he wants to hear more, and that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. I was under the impression that this was not site-specific because of the way it reads in here, and he's saying he wants to hear from them directly, and that's fine.
I want to know what kind of facility they have in mind of what they're trying to build, and then how are they going to take care of their people? If there was a need to evacuate, what type of, you know, how are they going to handle that? Is it going to be a professional operation, or you know, some fly-by-night thing? I want to make sure that you know, I give them the benefit of the doubt that if they're going to add on to their community for you know, the
elderly care
that we present them with every opportunity to do so, but yet not put anybody at risk. So I would,
when the fire chief was spoke to, was it explained to him that it was very site specific?
Yeah, I told him the whole story.
So I have a question. So this is for updating our comp plan. And what you're asking here is a rezone of that one specific area to accommodate these people,
because,
correct?
Because we're proposing rezoning of lots of things. And so
But this is part of that rezoning.
Yes.
So that's what we need to decide, whether we want to allow that to be rezoned or not.
Yes.
We're not making that decision now.
But this is what they're trying to do to update the comp plan. This is what the discussion is about.
Yeah.
And the zoning, yeah.
But we don't have to make a decision. What we have to do is give her direction.
So
Corey, I think you're saying then, how does it get represented back to us? With it in or with it out?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, and that's what I was saying, I was fine with John having them come back in and talk to us specifically about that one.
So are we going to have her change the zone or not?
No, but I don't want, look, this is the same thing Sean was talking about earlier, is that you can't scare off development. You can't be the board that sits up here and says no.
I understand that.
Without having a reason for saying no.
But you can't let that development, when the fire chief says
no. We are not saying yes.
I understand.
We're asking them to come forth and talk to us.
So
if we want to say no to them,
so are we gonna,
they're facing us, and we have the opportunity to tell them why.
Right, but what I'm saying is they want to change that zone. She's asking if should she change the zone or should she not change the zone. So are we not supposed to follow through on this until he comes and talks to us?
See, this has been through the Planning Commission. She's coming to us to see which direction we want to pursue.
And the Planning Commission is recommending it be changed.
Yes.
They have taken what the police chief said and what the fire chief has said and threw it out the window.
So they were against it.
No, they're for it.
No, the Planning Commission is for it.
Planning Commission wants to change that zone so they
can. I ran into situations here. I've been doing business quite a while here, so I've sat with Gary in certain things, and he opposes to it, and then we have a conversation, and where's the code? Well, there's no code. It's just what I feel, and we carry lengthy conversation, and all of a sudden, well, yeah, you kind of make sense, and so that's what John's trying to say. We want to talk to them.
Right. So
let us know what you feel and see. Hear us out too.
Okay, Council. Hold on a minute. Normally, that's something that's done by staff. Staff talks to them, they get their proposal, and that function of a rezone is actually done by the hearings examiner. That's our process, correct?
So rezone is different than everything else. The hearing examiner does hold the public hearing, but then it comes to you for that ordinance.
Okay. So, Ann, bail us out here.
I think probably what should happen on this is I should present it as this with the Planning Commission's recommendation, but then there's additional information that they didn't have. We didn't have the proponent. Maybe we have the letter that was submitted that we can have them actually as part of the process to give you their side of it.
Okay. All right.
If at all possible, I'd probably like the fire chief and all three of them here and make sure everybody's talking on the same page. That way, if the builder, the developer, maybe they didn't think of something, and when they put it out, go, oh, that makes sense.
So on the second page, I look at the maximum rollout that scenario, if everything's built to the maximum allowance of the density, so that would be 67 single-family houses, 457 duplexes, 124 plexes, and 400 units of apartments. And that would provide enough housing, even at the maximum projection, for 20 years. But we'll use up all the vacant land left in the city.
So in that 40 acres of the R4, that's the 400 dwelling units, is that single-family homes?
No, that's apartments.
That's apartments.
Mm-hmm. That 40 acres would be pretty tough. Apartments might work because you have a lot of parking, but that's got a lot of underwater drainage.
Yeah.
So it's like a little fork, and I mean, it's I know the layout. And whenever you have a layout like that, you can't build on it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you even have to take it out, and then you have to do like a year study, make sure there's no water. If there's water going through, you can't even take it out. So that's a little tough area right there, too.
400 might be optimistic.
Yeah. Well, I think what we have to think about too is that, you know, we've been talking about it. We think of land, but then we don't think of infrastructure, what it costs. You know, so if a developer is going to come here, for example, if we would have had to put sewer and stormwater all the way over here to the vet clinic, I was going to spend like $1.8 million without even putting a shovel in my ground. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. There's no money in it. So there's a lot of stuff like that happening in Othello. If you go south of 26, same thing. There's no sewer over there, no water. So that's even probably, I don't know, 3-4 million. There was supposed to be something built right there on Reynolds in 26. The developer backed off. Why? There's no infrastructure there. So if you're going to put some kind of a strip mall, restaurants and everything there, and they come in here and they have to spend $4 million before they even put the shovel in the ground, they're going to take off. So where to grow, I mean, we have, my opinion is we have 14th just east of the canal, front of Walmart, there's 800 acres. You know, we're already spending money to bring sewer through there, you know, go extra depth. And then later on connect, we're connecting to 4th right now, but later on connect all the way over here to Broadway and the veterinarian clinic is going to be another $1 million. But what I'm saying is that the cheapest way to grow Othello right now is that route. So when we talk about land available, yeah, land available, it's good to talk about it. But let's get down to the nitty gritty. What numbers do we have to put before? City's not going to go spend $4 million. They're not going to spend $1.8 million for me to start building a house. So not going to happen.
North of Cunningham, east of the canal to Lee Road, all the way over to 17.
See, right there, just 800 acres, if you use the frontage over here in front of Walmart for commercial, and then I don't know what we'd do in Lee Road, probably follow with the same pattern. Say 600 acres, six times six, that's 2,400 homes right there. And we can get it done with $1 million after we connect to 4th here, the city, you know what I mean? So we know that already. Do we go out for grants and later on hit us with latecomers fee or an LID? I don't know. But those are things that we have to start talking about.
So what's the purpose here on the available vacant land supply with regard to our zone change? What are you asking us?
This came out of the discussion about the zoning and if there should be areas that should be rezoned. So you know, we wanted to look at what land we have available for housing. So it's more of an informational item that we can move on.
Okay. Go ahead, Corey. You might as well lead off.
I'm very, very, very opposed to changing any R2s to R3s and R3s to R4s. You know, I've used the statement in every meeting we've had so far, You can't change the game. You can't change the rules in the middle of the game for people. You know, they've got homes are big investments, and it's your home. You know, you bought that home. I bought my home. When I bought my home, there was two homes that I looked at. One was next to an apartment building, and one's the home I own now. The one next to the apartment building was pretty much the same price range, a lot nicer home, but wouldn't even consider it because it was next to an apartment building. Would not even consider it. You know, and so now we want to go and change the rules for 500 or 600 people. John made a statement at the last meeting, said that he wouldn't want an apartment next to his home. You know what? Neither of the 500 or 600 people that this is going to affect.
Maria?
I'm
not.
That's good, Gina.
Yeah.
You could go either way?
Yeah.
Angel?
Against it.
Okay. Is that direction enough, Ann?
Yep.
Okay. What notification method should be used for the citywide zoning map changes? That's a good question. Tanya?
So,
do you have any suggestions?
What's allowed?
Social media. So I guess the big question is, do you want everyone to get a letter, or people that are like within a certain distance of the proposed zone change, only people that are getting their land changed? We're not required to do it citywide, we're not required to send out letters, we are required to, you know, publish a paper and do kind of basic presentation, but it's really a matter of do we want to spend money to send letters to
So the current city ordinance says everyone within a 300 feet, everyone within 300 feet of the zone change.
It's site-specific. When it's city-wide, okay. Then we're not required to send no notices.
So what's considered city-wide to zone specific? Because we're not changing every zone in the city.
No, but we're looking at making a lot of changes.
What is standard for the state?
I don't know if there's a standard. I think it's just each city decides for itself what's appropriate.
I think for your own, or for the city's, like, saving the headache of people coming in here, like the immediate, the people that are affected immediately. And then
the more notification, the better?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but cost-wise, if it's,
yeah.
Like, I don't know, 300 feet, because then you can use social media. And on things like that, Tanya, I'm sure, is very aware how fast it gets shared. And
yeah, I mean, most people, they're only going to be worried about their own, you know, what's the effect of my property? Yeah.
So you send something out directly to the people that it's affecting, and the people within 300 feet of that, and then social media for the rest. Yes. And yeah.
And they're all getting water bills every month anyways.
Yeah.
So they can
put
in the water bills.
Yeah, and usually put something on there.
Nobody even showed up.
We did our due diligence, though.
Yeah.
There are some requirements to Rachel's employer at the News Tribune. We do have some publishing requirements, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
Legal notice.
Oh, yeah.
People read those.
Okay.
Were there other things we need to talk about before we do public hearing?
No, thank you, Ann. It's been a long process. But it's been exhaustive. Yeah. And we appreciate it. All the work that's gone into this from Ann and staff and
the Planning Commission. Okay, so I'm going to move to item 5, which is unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before the council?
Can we find out about the doors out there?
Yeah, I've talked to Terry. They're still formulating a time that they can get to, you know, to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw Angel brought up about the light. I think I sat there for 8 minutes before finally, okay, I'm going to go.
Eight,
Main and Broadway.
Broadway.
Oh. I think yeah. The one that was broken.
Did you run the light?
I did.
I love it.
I'm sorry. La, 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 la.
How long ago?
A
couple weeks ago or just the other day?
About a week ago.
Okay. We had a, there's an outfit that came here. They're from Seattle and they are the experts in this. No. And I believe there are some glitches in our loop system, meaning that it works most of the time, but then there are times that it isn't working right. And so they were here today, but this was mainly for 14th Avenue and Main Street. And I've had problems. I had one problem one time this summer where I sat there and it just didn't recognize me as being there. And I finally did the same thing you did. I don't see any cops,
yeah.
So I'm going to go.
I'm right here.
Yeah.
That was in the moment I'm talking about. And there was no video evidence.
So are they done? Is that company done here? Or are they going to work on all the lights?
I think they checked out Broadway and they were going to look at 14th Avenue today.
Okay.
14th and Main.
Because motorcycles is another big problem. The lights don't recognize motorcycles. And I mean, even the light down here at 4th, where I've never heard of anybody having any problems other than you sit there forever on a bike.
The other thing Terry told me was that you're better off not going right up next to the center line. You're better off moving over just a little bit because that's where the system is.
The sensors.
It's a big loop of wire. And. Mm-hmm. You kind of got to go over the top of that. So if you're over to one side, it may not recognize the bike.
Right. Well, I'm a center lane rider anyway, so.
Not as wide.
No.
Yeah.
Is there any other unfinished business? Okay, I do have one, and that's the district court negotiations with the county are ongoing, and we have another meeting this Wednesday at 1:30. Mark is on the Law and Justice Committee, and if he's unable to attend, is there someone here who would like to? John, you would like?
Okay. When is it?
1:30 on Wednesday here at City Hall. I'll have Tanya, or actually I'll have.
I have Tanya, so they'll meet.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Is there any new business tonight? Okay, I have a couple of announcements. First, tomorrow night is the semi-annual meeting of the Fire Council, and it's the regular commissioner meeting at 220 South Broadway. That meeting is at 7 p.m. So, on that committee are Councilman Snyder, Lawless, and Bain. And so that meeting is tomorrow night at 7.
Yep.
Please attend. The other item I had was the McCain groundbreaking. That is, you have a flyer in front of you. That's next Tuesday from 11:30 to 2 at 100 Lee Street. My understanding, John, is that you have to RSVP. Is that correct? Because there's going to be a list at the gate.
You know, nobody ever told me about it. I am clueless.
Yeah. Somebody told me that.
They told you that, then tell.
So if you want to go, you need to RSVP here, as it says in this flyer, which I'll give you. I'll give you this flyer one or that, Rachel. Okay. I just got mine today.
I'll be there.
Yeah, I need you.
At work.
Yeah. Okay. Council, is there anything else you want to bring for the good of the order? Okay. Having no further business to come before the council, I'll adjourn tonight's meeting at 8:08 p.m.